in my group, so it's around 15 researchers working on computer edit methods that mainly use, on the one hand, the thermoeconomic and environment modeling methodologies. A huge effort is put on the process in energy systems integration, where the goal is to try to model the interactions between the different subsystems in a system, focusing on the rational use of energy, water, and waste in general, and with a topic also related to the integration of renewable energy in industrial systems. A characteristic of our approach is that we are using a lot of optimization techniques to help engineers taking decisions. One of the characteristics is that we try to develop the, based on a multi-objective optimization techniques, the thermoeconomic and environmental Pareto curves that allows to represent the trade-off between the efficiency and the economic, or the trade-off between the environmental impact, or the carbon dioxide emissions, and the economics. Which means also that we have to use a life cycle environmental impact assessment approach to really assess the environmental impact. One of the characteristics when you are using the optimization is that at the same time we try to we have to understand why a computer has found some solutions. So there is also a strong emphasis on trying to understand the solutions that have been generated by the optimization. And I'm going to try to explain you what we do, looking at the different domains of application. So on the one hand, we are going to discuss about the classical, I would say, approach of the process integration, which is trying to maximize the use of energy and the resources in industrial processes, with a strong emphasis on the site-scale integration. But the same techniques can also be applied for designing systems, process systems, in which the major applications in my group are in systems using fuel cells, power plants that are producing electricity with CO2 capture, and the biomass conversion to produce biofuels or biochemicals, introducing the concept of the biorefineries. And now the problems with the system engineers is that they also have the tendency of enlarging the system boundaries, which means that they my group is also working on applications in urban systems, with the introduction of industrial ecology concepts or industrial symbiosis development, but also introducing the concept of the virtual power plants. So the title was saying, okay, what is the energy transition? So what I'm going to explain is how the process systems engineering approach can help us in the energy transition. And the subtitle could be Smart Engineers for Smart Systems, smart being a buzzword, but I will show you that effectively this, the implementation of smart systems needs smart engineers. What is the energy transition? So today, I can represent the energy consumption of Switzerland by the concept of the 2000-watt society. So what is in fact a watt year per year and per inhabitant, which is a measure of the energy intensity of a country. So today, the Switzerland is using 4.4 kilowatts of energy per inhabitant and per year. And in fact, this is the primary energy consumption that is finally used in order to supply the needs of the society, which is divided into the household applications, the transportation sector, the services, and the industry. And that finally leads to final consumption of 3.3 watt year per year and per inhabitant, which is an energy intensity. And the goal from the government, which is declared by the government, is to go towards the 2000-watt society in the year of 2050, where in which we have to add two different elements. On the one hand, we have also to mitigate the carbon dioxide emissions, so the target is also to reach 1 ton of carbon dioxide per inhabitant. And in addition to this, following the Fukushima events or accident, the federal government has decided to phase out nuclear. Well, nuclear represents around 10% of our whole energy consumption in Switzerland, but 40% of the electricity. So it's depending on how we look at the system. So we have to move from a system which is consuming a lot of imported resources into a system that will integrate more renewable energy resources, or at least endogenous resources that we have available in Switzerland, which is a small country with a high population density. And this is this defines, in fact, the challenge for the engineers, because they have to design a system. Now, if I'm looking at what the International Energy Agency is showing us as what are the driving force for making this move, one can see that around more than 50% of the effort should come from efficiency. So, a priori, the engineers are at the right place there, as well as if we look at the second more important part, which is the integration of renewables and the carbon capture and storage, which is going to play a major role. So efficiency plays a very important role, and systems play also a very important role. So the major driving force are therefore to try first to look at an efficient use and reuse of energy, an efficient energy conversion, a good integration of renewable energy resources, the understanding of the system integration, which leads to consider large-scale systems, and the integration into the design of sustainable or sustainability the criteria. So if now I'm looking at what it means for the systems engineering, and especially for the system integration, we are in fact in the border of, on the one hand, looking at the people which are requiring service and products, and we have to assemble technologies that are produced by researchers and the research development effort, and we have to look at what is happening at the level of the territory. And the goal is to make this integration considering the three pillars of the sustainable development, which is not only looking at the benefits in terms of economy, but also looking at the environmental impact, so that at the end we will leave to our children a system which is at least as good as the one we have received from our parents. So what does it mean now in terms of actions? So the first, I have different types of actions. So the first one is obviously to reduce the amount of energy that we need for the services that we require. In addition to this, we have to be efficient in delivering these services. We have to integrate renewable energy resources in order to be to try to maximize the use of our own resources. We have to look at the integration and look for synergies. We have also to look at the equipment, which means we will have to invest capital in order to buy more efficient equipment or to build more efficient infrastructure. And we have to look at systems, and defining the system boundaries is perhaps one of the trick that can be used if we want to increase the overall system efficiency. Right, so I'm going to show you how this it translates for the process system engineers. In fact, process system engineers have to select the equipment. They have to look at how they are integrated, what is the optimal sizing, and what is the optimal operation of the industrial system. So if I'm taking the example of a process, in fact the process is converting raw materials into products using the energy as a driving force. And the energy is typically used in form of heating and electricity. The energy balance is showing me that the energy that is entering here and that is not leaving in form of products has to leave the system and will leave the system in form of a cooling requirement. So now if I want to increase the efficiency of the system, then I will try to install heat recovery. And for this we have good techniques like pinch heat cascade analysis and pinch analysis. Once we have done the heat recovery, then we can perhaps add the heat pumping that will change the temperature level of the waste heat and convert it into useful heat for the process. But we can also convert the remaining energy into useful energy, perhaps by selling heating, which means that at the same time we will have then to increase the amount of the system boundary, sorry, but we can also produce electricity, connecting then the system to the electrical grid. Something which is missing here is the energy, the mass balance. The mass balance that is creating waste, and if we have to look at the whole system, so it means that we have to integrate the waste management, meaning that we are going to recycle sometimes the waste into raw materials, perhaps spend energy for doing it, but also probably use part of the waste as an energy resource for the energy conversion system. And in the energy conversion system, then we are going to try to maximize the use of the renewable energy in the system, but also by fossil fuels that will be converted into heat that we need at a certain temperature here. And typically what we are going to do is that by combustion or by cogeneration, we are going to produce heat and electricity for our system. And probably we will also be in a situation where we will be able to export electricity. Now, exporting, doing the combustion means that we are going to produce carbon dioxide, and when we have carbon dioxide and water, and if we have renewable energy available, like the sun, then we can also recycle the carbon dioxide, create a loop here where we will feed the carbon dioxide that we have captured here and feed it again in form of methane, and perhaps export biofuels out of the system. So one of the major mechanisms that I have used there is a list of technologies that I have assembled to create a system, and something which is most probable there is that I will have increased the system boundaries in order to allow the expression of the synergies. And at the end, I hope to have a system which has a low emissions in terms of carbon dioxide, ideally as well a very good efficiency in terms of exergy, so in the use of the potential of the energy, and the best cost that we can imagine, so that we will make profit out of the system. So these are the actions which have to be implemented. So it means that we need a method that allows to do it. This is a typical approach when we have to do process integration. So the first step is to look at the data, extract the data, define the energy requirements, then proceed with the conventional approach where you do an energy process integration approach with a targeting and then a synthesis approach to finally end up with a final solution. And the final solution is most of the time requires several iterations that I will explain later on. Okay, so if now I'm looking at what is happening, if we have to look at the large scale, we know that we can play with the process operation and that we can perhaps add or modify systems in order to increase the unit, the efficiency of the unit operations. Then afterwards we have to look at the process unit integration. And there, perhaps we will already have to make a loop here, because it's possible that we will have to adapt the operating conditions of the process unit operations in such a way that they reveal their interest with respect to the rest of the system. Then afterwards we do heat recovery, so which is expressed here by the hot and the cold composite curve. Then analyzing these curves allows us to identify heat pumping options. So this is exactly the same situation, but you can see that the heat recovery is much higher at the expense of a small amount of mechanical power, which is used in order to reduce the energy requirement of the system. Once we have this, then the next step is to look at the how we supply the energy, the hot utility in the system, which introduces then the combined heat and power production, which is the heat and power production, which is expressed here by a possibility of adding a gas turbine, of adding steam network, and even steam recovery or ORCs in the system. Once we have defined all the streams that are here, then we can go into the heat exchanger network design. At the level of the heat exchanger network design, it's important to have a very comprehensive methodology, because we are not only talking about a process unit, but a list of process units like the one that I seen on the picture here, that are all interlinked or have to be related one with the other by using heat distribution system like steam network or hot oil or cooling water or glycolic water. So it means that we need also to have a method that allows us to dive into the details by minimizing the interactions of the systems, because at the same time I would like to have something that can be started and operated. So we need methods that allows us to generate all this information, and I will not I would like here to emphasize the contributions that were made by Professor Grossman in this field with the heat exchanger network design, but also all the methods that I use here for designing the combined heat and power productions were initiated by his work with Papoulias 30 years ago. And finally, once we have these solutions, we are able then to look at the to assess the probability the profitability of the system, and finally take the final decision. So these are well-known techniques that are used for process integration. The next step is there are open questions, because now I'm not only looking at a single process, but I have to organize the heat transfer between processes, which means also that I will have probably more than one stakeholders in the system, which means that I will have to be able to add constraints in the system design, which sometimes creates some difficulty and needs methods to be adapted. Something which is also important is that I'm not only looking at the heat recovery, but I'm looking at the whole system, integrating the energy conversion in the system, which means looking at combined heat, coal, and power production, waste management, which is integrated in the system, and the combined water, solvent, and hydrogen integration, which are all support of productions in big sites. And this allows me then to introduce the industrial ecology, where we are going to look at multiple processes. And the multiple processes that can operate at different operating conditions have to be dealt with using multi-period approach. And at the end, what we have to look at concerning the final solutions, that we have to assess the robustness of the solutions and the flexibility of the system. And one of the beauty of the approaches which are based on process integration and that is that all these elements can be handled by applying mathematical programming techniques. So now, in order to continue, I'm going to discuss about the process system design. So we have to select the different equipment and the size of the equipment that we will use in the system to convert the resources that we have into the products that we would like to sell. We have to define how the different equipments are interconnected and the way they are operated. And I'm going to take, for doing this, we need a methodology. And the methodology that we are developing is based on the following steps. So first, we define what we think is the problem. And I'm saying what we think because it's not sure that this will be the final solution that we will, at the end, see. we define the system boundaries, and from and knowing the objectives, then we are going to set up a list of options. And the list of options has to be defined in a systematic way, in that I would name some Lego bricks, in such a way that each of the technology that I would put as a technology option will be able to give me information about this, its efficiency in terms of the thermochemical conversion, in terms of the cost, and in terms of environmental impact. One of the characteristics of these systems is that they are going to create interfaces. It means the way that they can exchange heat or mass with the other elements in the system. And what we are going to do is that instead of generating the flow sheet, we are going to generate a process superstructure, which can be generated either automatically or explicitly by assembling the different options. One of the characteristics of the approach that we are going to use then is to represent the heat integration and the mass integration by applying mathematical programming techniques and the heat cascade, for example, that will be used as a way to represent to model the heat exchanger network. One of the advantages of doing this is that we do not have to solve the heat exchanger network design a priori, because we don't know what are the options that have to be considered in the system. Once we have this, then we will be able to calculate the economical performances of the system, the thermodynamic efficiency, and as well the environmental impact of the system applying the life cycle inventories. We will still have decision variables that we are going to fix by applying multi-objective optimization, and for example, we are going to look at trade-offs like the trade-off between the emissions of the system and the investment. What you can see here is the Pareto curve, where you have a list of options which are represented by different points with different colors. So each color represents a set of configuration. In between the different points here, you change most probably the operating conditions in order to increase the efficiency, but you can see that at a certain time there is no way to increase anymore the efficiency of the system, and the system is going to choose to jump into another configuration. So this is, for example, what is happening when you try to improve the efficiency of a power plant. At a certain time you are blocked, and then you have, if you want to reduce the carbon dioxide emissions, for example, you have to add a new system that is going to do the CO2 capture. One of the characteristics here is that we have asked an optimizer to extract what are the good solutions. So we have eliminated all the solutions that were here that are not the good one. But still, we have a list of solutions. So we need to have analysis methods that allows us to understand why this solution is the best one, and to verify, on the one hand, that all the constraints that define the real problem are effectively considered, that the system boundaries are consistent, that the technological options, the list of options is complete, and therefore we most probably will have to go into this convergency system by applying an iterative procedure several times. So you understand that for doing this, you need a computer. So this is the computer platform that we are developing. And this computer platform has the following elements. On the one hand, I have told you that there are some optimization tools that work with decision variables. And these decision variables are sent to process flow sheet models. The process flow sheet models are going to define the data that are needed to do the system integration. And then with the system integration results and the process flow sheet models, we are going to obtain the state variables that are needed in order to size equipments, apply sizing procedures, and from the sizing define the cost and the environmental impact of the system in order to draw performances that will be solved by the optimization. Okay, these are the major building blocks. Now, if I'm looking at my system, what are the necessary elements that allows me to implement this methodology? First, I need to have something which is structuring the data. I need databases, and the databases have to be related to geographical information, because most probably I will have to look at where the different units are in the system. In addition to this, I need to have databases of my technological options, which means that I need databases of models. And these models have to be understood by the rest of the system. And this is what is happening here, in which we are going to use process flowsheet models using conventional tools, so you can recognize Aspen, you can recognize ISIS or GPROMS or Belsim as simulation software, but you can see also that we are using city simulation software or MATLAB, for example, as a simulation software. So it means that each technology which is here can be handled by a special flowsheeting tool, which means that we need to have something which is going to encapsulate the models into a systematic approach in which we will be able to model the interfaces of the different building blocks that are here in order to do the system integration. So the building blocks receive instructions on how to do the simulation, what are the degrees of freedom, what are the interfaces that are calculated as a function of the degrees of freedom, what are the environmental impacts that will be calculated, and what are as well the costing that we could expect. Something which is also important there is that the database that is here doesn't have to be developed by the same, the elements in the database have to be developed by different people. So it means that in addition to the simulation mechanism, we have also to add information about the reporting and even the definition of certified procedure in order to optimize the system, to integrate the different models. Once we have applied the simulation, then we can go into the system integration, and where we are going to apply the to solve the interface between the different building blocks. And this is done mainly by applying mixed integer linear programming techniques for the targeting phase, but also sometimes the MINLP approach when we have to design the heat exchanger networks. In addition to this, we have to embed into the approach the optimal control strategies, because we have to look at the operation of the system, and we have to design systems that are assuming that you will also operate them in the optimal conditions. And this will be very important when we look at cities, for example, because the demands are really highly varying with the seasons, but also with the time of the day. So we have to define the size of the equipment, taking into account the variations of the demand. Once we have this, then we have to connect to databases that allows us to do the life cycle inventories, and as well do the sizing and the costing. So these are databases that are handled here, which finally allows us to send all the information to the optimization. And the optimization can be quite heavy, because we have to do a multi-objective optimization, so it means that we are going to explore the space of all the possibilities that we have, and we have to generate them in the Pareto domain. And this relates then to, on the one hand, the use of techniques to do the problem decomposition, so limiting the number of decision variables and maximizing the number of decisions that are taken by the mixed integer linear programming approach. But in addition to this, and especially because the system is quite heavy, we have to take advantage of grid computing facilities, which means that sometimes we will make the calculations in parallel, and we will use techniques like surrogate modeling, for example, in order to ease or to speed up the solving procedure. Another element which is also related to the parallelizing of the approach is the study of the uncertainty, because we have to recognize, especially for energy systems, that the energy prices are quite hard to predict, especially for a long periods, and that the price can have a big impact on the decisions that we will on the system design that we will generate. And of course, you need also to have graphical user interfaces. Now I can show you some examples of the application. So the first one is the calculation of the design of a new fuel cell system, which is in fact combining a solid oxide fuel cell with a micro gas turbine. So these were the two initial building blocks two of my colleagues were our specialists in developing these techniques, and what we did is that we did design a system which is in fact combining the solid oxide fuel cell here with a gas turbine concept. But what you can see is that instead of having the conventional gas turbine where you have the compressor followed by a burner and then an expansion turbine, here we did the reverse. So we are taking the depleted fuel, we are finishing the burning here, expanding first, going into sub-atmospheric conditions, separating the water that is produced by the combustion at low temperature, and then taking the carbon dioxide that is produced by the fuel cell and compress it up to the atmospheric conditions. So which means that in this part we have the production of fuel carbon dioxide. This is possible because we have observed that the fuel cell is a solid oxide fuel cell that is separating the oxygen from the air at the level of the cathode here, and which allows us then to have a fuel here, syngas, which do not have nitrogen. So if we burn with the remaining fuel with oxygen, then we have pure carbon dioxide leaving the system. Now, something which is important is that we have heat that is released here, we have heat that is released at this level here, as well as here in the cooling of the reversed inverted gas turbine. We can do the same for the depleted air, which is mainly nitrogen and oxygen here. There are some needs of heat here, but we are going to supply heat at this level here. And what we can see is that we can use the heat that is released here by system integration in order to supply the heat that is needed for the fuel processing. And the consequence of this is that we are going to optimize the operating conditions of the system in such a way that the reactor, which is endothermic here, will use all the heat that is available, the waste heat that is generated here and here. And the way it will do it is by maximizing the flow of water that is going to produce the hydrogen here, and the hydrogen will then be exploited by the fuel cell. So by optimizing the operating conditions, we are able to show a system that has an electrical efficiency of 80% and is still able to produce 12 to 10% of heat useful for heating purposes. And by doing this, then we have a very efficient system, because the best system that is known today that is not using fuel cells is at the level of 60% and is releasing carbon dioxide diluted in air, while here I have pure carbon dioxide that I can capture. So this is a breakthrough, and that the other breakthrough is the fact that these are small systems, and this introduces on the one hand a challenge for engineers, because it's a small system that is doing a very sharp heat integration. So if I go back here, you can see that the two composite curves are really close one from the other. That shows that there is no exergy loss in the heat transfer here. But in addition to this, I would like to have a system which is well integrated. So, and for the system design people, then it will then mean that instead of working with the 1D representation of the grid of the heat exchanger network, then we have to play with the 3D representations and arrange the flows in a 3D instead of a 1D, which is quite challenging for the future. But which is also an opportunity, because we do not have to forget about 3D printing in the future. Another paradigm is that we are going to replace a very big unit by a huge number of smaller units. And a huge number is going to justify a lower cost for these systems. Another important element there is that the scaling factor will be more or less near one if we go down into a very huge number of smaller units. So it's a very new vision of the energy systems if we are using this type of technologies. which allows me then to show you what will be then the final consequence of if I'm looking at the energy services that have to be supplied to a family. So here, for example, I have looked at the heating requirement in Switzerland for a family, so it corresponds to 500 watts year per year and per inhabitant, the electricity consumption in the perspective of the 2001 society, which is 700 watts, and the mobility needs. Now, if we convert this into a new system, which would use the solid oxide fuel cell, in which the electricity that is produced by the solid oxide fuel cell can be used for mobility, in which the heat that is produced by the solid oxide fuel cell can be used for heating, and in which the extra amount of electricity that is produced by the solid oxide fuel cell is used to drive a heat pump which has an efficiency of a coefficient of performance of 5, then what you can see is that you can have a 65% energy saving, and it's only at the level of the energy conversion, so I have not changed the demand. So this is a very important element, because it means that we have the factor 3, which is realized by an efficient energy conversion system that is built based on a good understanding of the system, because I have applied the system analysis here, I have applied the system integration here, and what I can tell you is that the solid oxide fuel cell, which is here, can also be plugged, because it is small, in the car the day I need a range extender. When I'm commuting, I can use only the batteries, but when I want to have a longer distance, then I can use the solid oxide fuel cell as a range extender that I will not then use as a heating device in my building. So this is the perspective for the system integration, and I have shown for energy conversion system. Another element contribution from the process system engineering is the integration of biomass. So you can produce natural gas from biomass, and if I'm producing natural gas from biomass, what you can see is that I can use the natural gas in my solid oxide fuel cell that will feed my houses. So I have to look at the stoichiometry, and the stoichiometry is telling me that if I'm using wood, I'm going to add water. I have to add water in the system, and I will produce half of methane, half of carbon dioxide. And for doing this, I have to do drying, gasification, gas cleaning, methane synthesis, synthetic gas upgrading to separate the carbon dioxide from the methane. Now, if I'm going into more details, I can do the drying in different ways, I can do gasification in different ways, and some of the operations are endothermic and some of the operations are exothermic. So, for example, the methanation is exothermic while the gasification is endothermic. What is typically done is that we are using part of the syngas in order to supply the heat to the system, but if we look at the system integration, then perhaps it would be better to use the depleted fuel, which results from the purification of the synthetic natural gas in order to supply the heat to the system in such a way that we will reduce the amount of syngas that is burned here, which means that we increase the flow in this system. The other element is the system integration. So if I have heat at different temperature levels, so I can perhaps produce steam at high pressure, expand it in turbine, and cogenerate electricity. And the electricity could be used in order to produce hydrogen. Well, having hydrogen makes sense, because then I will have more methane and less carbon dioxide. And the byproduct is oxygen. Okay, I can use the oxygen in the gasification, so I have a new benefit coming from the integration. So I can model the different elements in the system. I can then use the heat cascade as a heat exchanger network model, in which I will optimize the combined heat and power production of the system. So, for example, here you have the combined heat and power production from the steam cycle. And I will be able to generate this kind of curves, which is showing as a function of the synthetic natural gas production efficiency, the specific investment which is related. And each point in the system corresponds to a one system design. I can then compare these systems, and I would like just to mention that without parallel computing, this would have not been possible to make the calculations, because only this drawing would have costed 1.5 years of computation time. In addition to this, we have, as we are dealing with renewable energy resources, we have to look at where we are and what are the resources which are available. And if I'm choosing one size, I will have an area which will be covered, and it means also that I will have to pay a certain amount for the transportation of the biomass, which depends where we where I am, which means that I really have to make a complete detailed design of the system, because I will have to calculate what is the best size of the element. And in addition to this, I will have to add the in addition to the supply chain, I will have to add all the environmental impact which is created not only by the process itself, but all the supply chains of all the elements that are needed in the system. This is what is described here, which allows me to calculate the life cycle impact assessment indicators that we will use in the optimization. And this is then shown here, where different systems can lead to different efficiency as a function. So we did a three-objective optimization here, where you have on the one hand the biomass profitability, on the other hand the environmental impact measured by life cycle indicator, and in addition to this, the color representing the size of the system. And what you can see is that the different generations of evolution of the process are leading to different Pareto curves in the system. Okay, the last element is the decision making. So we are in a framework where we know that the prices are not well known. So what we do is that we consider a distribution of prices, for example, for the rest of the different resources that we have, for the carbon tax, for the investment. And then what we do is that we make a Monte Carlo simulation, and we give points to the systems in the Pareto curves that have the best performances, which allows us to finally identify among all the solutions that we have generated, the one that have the highest probability of being selected as being the best system. And this allows us to show where is the best solution, where is the competition for the other one. And if I'm taking the list of the Pareto curves that I have generated, I'm able to identify among all the configurations that I had where are the ones, so the big circles are the ones that are that have the highest probability of being selected as being the best in the whole list of processes that I have generated. Okay. Now I have with this system I have an efficiency which reaches 75%. I'm co-generating 2% of electricity, and I still have 13% of heat available. So I have to ask myself, what do I do with the heat? And this introduces, in fact, the possibility of looking at the different grids which are concerned. So on the one hand, I will have the gas grid. I will have also the carbon dioxide grid, which is going to take the carbon dioxide that I have separated, which is a byproduct of the production, the electrical grid, but also the district heating grid. But it means that I have to look at where I am and where are my demands. And this is then changing the system boundaries, looking at not only where a single process, but a single process that has to be integrated with the supply chain of the resources and with the possible use in cities. The problem is the same. I have the operating cost, I have the annual investment, so I have to decide what is finally the size of the system, but all, in this case, I have also to identify where I have to place the different elements in the system. Something which is quite interesting, and I will go very fast on it, is that a building is also an industrial process with streams to be heated and streams to be cooled down. So it means that I can draw composite curves of a building. I can also add heat pumping in the system. However, I have to look at the seasons. And I have also to agglomerate different types of buildings that I can see in a given zone of the city. Which means that finally I have a network to be designed, but in which systems is much more difficult to apprehend. So what you need also is to look at what are the different resources. So here is the example of using the wastewater as a resource for heating purposes. And 40% of the heat requirements can be, in this case, produced by recovering the heat from the wastewater treatment plant. And there is something which is important here, is that the waste that is produced by the people is finally converted here by the sludge treatment into part into biogas by biomethanation, which allows us to have the heat, the produced electricity that we need for treating the water. But look at the numbers. We have 60 kilowatt here for 9 kilowatt here, and we have 200 kilowatt here for 9 kilowatt in terms of biogas. So it would be much better to look at the resources in form of hot water in a wastewater treatment plant rather than looking just at the biogas that is produced. But even if I'm looking at the biogas, what I can tell you is that there are a lot of options. I can not only burn the biogas in a gas engine, but I could also purify the biogas and use it as a carbon source, in which I'm going to use the hydrogen in order to increase the amount of methane that I can then feed into my solid oxide fuel cell that I have shown you. So now what you can see here is that there are a list of different technologies that are in competition in at each node of my whole system. In addition to this, I can organize the transfer between the different nodes in the system, if it is a city, and then I have to decide which kind of system I'm going to use to transfer the heat. So the conventional one is the hot water that is transferred from one place to another. But there are alternatives, like, for example, using carbon dioxide under pressure, which is distributed in the liquid and the gas form. So it means that if you have a cooling need, then you can evaporate the carbon dioxide. If you have heating needs, you can condense the carbon dioxide, and you will play with compressors in order to satisfy the temperature level of the heat requirement. Now, the beauty of this system is that you always supply the heat at the temperature that is needed. So if you have a building with a low temperature heat system, it will pay less than a building with a high temperature heat. But at the same time, if I have a need for cooling, like a data center, for example, it will supply the heat by evaporating carbon dioxide that will be reused by the people that need heating. So now, if you take this as a system, what we have been demonstrating is that if we apply this in the city center of Geneva, we are able to heat and cool the city center with only 16% of the energy that is used today, without changing the needs. So we have not changed the buildings, we have just improved the energy conversion of the system. And there is a profitability for this realization. The break-even is in 5 years, so it means that it is quite efficient. And if we add to this the solid oxide fuel cell system that I have shown, then the savings is even bigger. And if you obviously reduce the energy consumption by renovation, it's even better. Something which is important here is that in the final solutions that we are showing, more than around 60% of the cost of the energy services is related to investment, which means that only 40% are related to the cost of the utility. So it means that the system is to some extent more reliable in terms of finances, because only 40% are related to the energy market. Okay, the problem is that we have to apply techniques that allow us to solve the problem. If we have 100,000 buildings, so you will not be able to solve the problem explicitly. So we need to have clustering approach that allows us to look at the territory with a set of subsystems. You need also, and this is just to show you that we can look at the whole, all the buildings and finally end up with a list of well-chosen sections inside the territory, which are assembled in order to be able to do the system integration. The other technique that is used, the clustering technique, is used in order to avoid having to calculate 20 years of operation. So we, by clustering techniques, we have been able to demonstrate that using 7 typical days allows to represent 20 years of operation with an error which is even lower than using a typical year for the simulation. And then the last element that I would like to highlight, because we are near the end of the time slot, is the integration with the electrical grid. The integration with the electrical grid is, sorry, I'm going to skip this part, is introducing the possibility of using heat storage systems, which are included in each node of my whole system, as a way to deface the time at which we consume the electricity from the time at which we consume the heat. And this is quite important, especially when we have solar panels that can produce electricity or heat. And that have to be, for which the energy has to be used at the time where it is harvested from the sun. And so having a good understanding of the system dynamics, have a good understanding and having chosen the right size for the storage systems, having a smart optimal predictive control management box, then we will be able to maximize the efficiency of the system and maximize the use of the renewable energy resources. The system is quite complex. I just wanted to show you what is inside. So there is a predictive control system that is using mixed integer linear programming here, which is defining the set points for the operation of the system. And what you can see is that if in a system you have a cogeneration unit, a heat pump, and the storage, the same day with different price profile will have very different appearance on the electrical grid. So this is a system which is using the cogeneration most of during most of part of the day and the heat pump during the night. But if you change the price of electricity, so for example, this represents the presence of photovoltaics in the system, then you can see that the heat pump is going to operate. And we have shown that it was possible to deface up to 10 hours of the operation of the system in order to supply doing predictive control, optimal predictive control strategies, and which replaces batteries. Of course, we can also add other systems. I will skip this part just to tell you that there are a lot of different systems that can use thermal storage in order to store electricity, and we never have to forget that the round-trip efficiency has a complementary, which is the waste heat, and the waste heat can be used in district heating systems, especially when we are using carbon dioxide network to distribute the heat. Trees and biomass is also a way to store electricity, but I will skip this because I think that I have to finish. So I would like just to show you the conclusions of my system, of my analysis. First, now I will go here. The same approach can also be used for cars. And we have a project together with Peugeot Citroën in which we are using process integration techniques. So this is the composite curve of a car in certain conditions. And we can see that we can integrate Rankine cycles in the system in order to maximize the use of the waste heat of the car in order to produce additional electricity that we will be able to use in the electrical motor of a hybrid system. We can use the same optimization techniques where we can see what is as a function of the powertrain efficiency, the emissions, or the size of the electrical motors, and evaluate it in different driving cycles. So I would conclude by showing this part. So what I have shown is that we can replace a very efficient system, which is the system of today, which is within 100 units of natural gas to supply my needs in terms of mobility and living by a new system that is based on renewable energy, that is using natural gas that is produced by converting the bio waste into biofuel in form of natural gas. The natural gas can be converted into electricity for my car, into electricity for my house, into heat for my house, that is then afterwards combined with the solar heat. And what we can show is that instead of consuming 100 units of fossil fuel, we can use only 31 units of renewable energy. Something which is also important, the needs in this case for my sustainable family is 2 hectares of sustainably deharvested cropped forest, which is not so much. In Switzerland we do not have enough, but I'm sure that in the US you have enough forest to supply this. And so look at this number. So this is the investment that is needed per capita to buy all the wood to biogas production facilities with the values that we have used for the evaluation. So it means that it's not so much, less than $200 per $700 per capita, just in form of investment. And this is my conclusion. So we need to understand well how the technologies are integrated, which means that we need models that allow us to represent all the possible interactions in the system. I'm pretty convinced that the use of multi-objective optimization is allows us to generate the list of solutions, which is typically what the engineers try to do by hand, and this is where they are most of the time stacked. We have to integrate the concept of services and to the concept of multi-services, so we can produce at the same time fuel, heat, electricity, and waste treatment. But for this, we have to be able to do the optimal management. We have also to integrate the knowledge, reveal the interdisciplinarity of the different aspects. So if I'm talking about the electrical network, I have to speak with the electrical engineers that are really not using the same language as the language that I'm using in chemical engineering. I have also to really well understand the integration of the system in order to integrate the waste heat valorization. Most of the buildings are heated at around 20 degrees C, while the waste heat of most of the industrial processes is at the level of 50 degrees C minimum. And at the end, we have also to integrate, to have a better understanding of the integration of the renewable energy resources. And there, something which is quite important is the use of biogenic carbon as an energy carrier and an energy storage system, because it's a chemical system which has the highest efficiency. So the conclusion is that smart energy transition needs smart process system engineers. Smart process system engineers need methods to solve complex problems. And the conclusion is that perhaps in this case, the problems will not be complex anymore. I hope that I have kept the time, and I'm ready to answer questions if you have.
Thank you very much, François. I apologize for putting you a little bit through a forced march in terms of finishing up quickly, but yeah. I think it was a very, very, very interesting overview of the kind of things that you're doing in Switzerland. So I don't know if there's any question from the audience. We have time for one or two questions. I have a question. When you presented the numbers for Switzerland in terms of energy usage, is that kind of typical of Europe, or is Switzerland lower or higher than what one would see in Germany, let's say, or
Germany? So Switzerland is a little bit lower than Germany, but not far from the mean of Europe. Typically, we are a little bit better than Europe. But we are much better than the US. So when I'm talking about around 5,000 watt per year and watt year per year and inhabitant, the US are around 11. So it's twice the amount. It's in the specific consumption. And one could say that it also reveals the price of energy, because we are paying much more for the fuel that we are using. For example, there is a factor 2 to 3 when we compare the price you pay and the price we pay. So it means also that having the incentive having the incentive of the energy price, which is high, leads to systems which are much more efficient. But nevertheless, the we need to do a factor 3 if we want to go to the 2000 watt society by preserving our economical growth.
In the United States, it looks like energy prices are not going to change much. They're actually come down quite a bit.
Yeah, I know.
Both oil and natural gas. So.
And this is not encouraging the efficiency. But on the other hand, one could argue that if you are producing shale gas with high efficiency, it means most probably not the way you are doing today, but the way you will do it in the future, then it's better to think about using natural gas than using coal, especially because natural gas offered the opportunity of using the fuel cells, for example, which means higher efficiency in the production and as well as the cogeneration, as I have shown. In addition, as natural gas is also a good energy carrier of the renewable energy, so like for example the one that you can produce from biomass, or even the one that you can produce by photovoltaics, because if you want to transfer the photovoltaic electricity from the summer to the winter, then you will need an energy carrier which will be a chemical one, and natural gas is by far the best one.
Mm-hmm.
We have the distribution network, which will be paid by the shale gas in between.
Yes. François, I think we have to cut it here, because, as I said, the graduate students have to go to a seminar. It starts in a few minutes.
Okay, no problem.
Down to that.
It has been a pleasure to make the presentation, and if you have questions, you have my email, so do not hesitate to contact me.
Yeah, and we did record the presentation, and we have the slides here, so with your permission, we'll put it up on the web page as we have the other presentation.
Yeah, and I will be happy to have also the link, so that I can also diffuse the information from my side.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure, and see you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, see you.